Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes and Mike Johnson made this announcement at 4 o'clock. The O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, unfit to host for the next 2 weeks. All right, so two more weeks. They are unfit to host. No more explanation. No more details. That's how we roll here, picking up off the P's and Q's from the NHL. No details, no info. But they'll be back in a couple of weeks. And I was just off last week. It's great to be back. I learned something, Johnny. And I feel like you've probably experienced this before. Do you have three kids? I think you've got three kids.
I have two kids.
Two kids. Okay, so yeah. You and I, we both have two kids. My oldest is 4 and a half. And she's kind of into YouTube now. And we're always trying to hold back on how much YouTube she watches, because in the mornings she gets up and she's like, can I watch YouTube? At night, can we watch YouTube quickly before we go to bed?
Yep.
And she is technologically savvy, which is amazing to me. I'm not surprised, because I've seen other kids go through this as well. But she's 4 and a half, and she knows how to call for Siri, like how to hit the button properly and ask Siri a question. All right?
Right.
So she'll be on Siri, and she'll be like, hey, Siri, can you please put on a video from Ryan's Mystery Playdate? Thank you, Siri. And it dawned on me as she's talking to Siri, she is so much more polite with Siri than she is with me. Like, I'm so proud of her. I'm like, wow, please, thank you. But it's Siri that's picking up the pleases and the thank yous. Then she'll turn to me and be like, hey, Muffin, let's go. Like, whenever you're ready, move it, pal. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it happens at both ends of the spectrum. Like, so my daughters are teenagers, and they go on YouTube and Snapchat and Instagram and everything else all day and night, and it's a never-ending battle to try to curtail that. But they don't ask Siri so much for my parents, who are older, in the 70s, and they are kind of learning Siri, probably at the same level as your four-year-old. And I get my dad trying to, like, tell Siri to send a message, and he's saying, oh, I'm sorry about that, Siri. That's not what I'm like, it's a computer. You don't need to apologize when you give a wrong command. Just give another one that's correct. And they can't help themselves. But that's great. You've done a nice job, your four-year-old. It's in her nature to say please and thank you. That's a good job by you guys.
It's very conflicting. Again, on one hand, I'm a proud parent, and I feel like, okay, we're making this work. We're making it happen. This is difficult for everyone. We've got young kids at home during a pandemic. It has not been easy. There's probably been a little bit too much screen time, but they can't interact with their friends. They can't go to school. It's been tough. But you know, she's picking up on the on what she's supposed to say, on the politeness and thank you and please and all that. But it is reserved, I wouldn't say all the time, but for the most part, for, like, you know, Google Home and for Siri. And
not thanks for dinner, Mom.
No.
It's thanks for the show, Dad.
Yeah. It's
Siri.
Exactly.
Please.
Siri,
yes.
Throw on some JoJo Siwa. Thank you. Hey, Dad. I asked you for something minutes ago. Yeah,
that's
it's weird.
My parents,
isn't it so weird? And I'm sure I don't know if I've ever done that before, because I've grown up with technology, and I feel like, you know, we're in our prime, quote unquote, and we're familiar with it, and we're always on our devices. So I'm always on my phone and my iPad. So I wouldn't necessarily feel uncomfortable and to a point where I'd have to apologize. But I've witnessed that before. You know, people saying sorry to Siri or to Google or. And to your point, it's like they don't care. They're not a
they're
person.
Okay with it.
They really don't care. But anyway, Jamal Mayers will join us here in a moment. Longtime NHLer, your former teammate. He's an analyst down in Chicago, and now he's an author. He's got a book
Who
out.
Knew? Who
he's got
knew?
A book out. How do you feel about that? I mean, he's your guy. You know him.
We sat beside each other on the plane in St. Louis, and he always, you know, he'd have stuff out. He was building a cottage or something. He had the architectural plans out one day and rolling the big sheath of paper. I'm like, really, Jammer? Are you going to do this right now? He's like, yeah, I'm going to make some adjustments. So he's a bright guy. He's always had a variety of interests. So, I mean, I guess it's great. I mean, we've seen Zach Hyman is a published author of a couple of children's books as well. And I think it's a great thing for guys to do, and maybe somewhat topical right now, just kind of the idea of inclusivity and making hockey for everyone, and maybe some of what his experiences were like growing up in Toronto playing hockey, which well, I can ask him whether they've all been positive or maybe a little negative mixed in there as well.
Sure. Yeah, and I would assume he played in the GTHL growing up.
Like, absolutely, he did. Right? Yeah, I think he played for, I want to say Thornhill, but Richmond Hill, Thornhill, one of those teams.
One of the hills. One of
One
the
of the
hills
hills.
north of the city.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, one of those. So I think Richmond Hill was in forever. Thornhill got in late. I don't know. They come and go, man. Like I haven't played in the GTHL in over 20 years, and I hear some names of teams, and I'm like, who are they? And when did
No
they
idea.
show up? I never heard
No
of those
idea.
teams.
Yeah.
I just assume when I played, like the 8 years that I was playing in the GTHL or whatever it was, that's all that ever existed. No one before, no one after. And I don't want to hear about any of these other new goofy teams. You're
Well,
not
but I
legitimate in
know,
my books.
like when I was Toronto Young Nats, which is where,
Yep.
Eric Lindros played. Toronto Red Wings, where Mike Pekka, Kevin Weeks played. Don Mills Flyers was Anson Carter's, where he played. The Mississauga Reps. Toronto Marlies, where I played, like
Yep.
those were the kind of the core team.
That
But
was
I
it.
heard that
Rexford
Wexford is
Raiders.
now shut. Wexford, which was Stan Butler's team, and they
Yep.
churned out a trillion college scholarships every year. That Wexford doesn't exist anymore, if I'm not mistaken. Someone correct me on Twitter, but
I
I thought
think you might be right.
that thing folded. We used to play down at Ted Reeve
Ted
Arena,
Reeve. Yep.
and it was around forever and very successful franchise, and it's kind of gone by the wayside.
Well, I
And
know
now
Ted
there's
Reeve is still there, but I
Ted
don't
Reeve
know.
is, but
Yeah.
the Wexford Raiders are not filling it anymore.
I did
So I
not know
could.
that. I played for them as a kid.
Yeah,
Yeah, there
so did
were,
I. My
yes.
last years of AAA were for Wexford, but I don't know. I don't have boys. I've never been involved in minor hockey, almost thankfully. So I'm a little clued out on
Yeah, I'm
all the
completely out of the
terminology.
loop. I don't know anyone, you know, that I'm really close with that's playing. And I'm sure it's the, I mean, in fact, I'm sure it's even crazier now than it was when I was playing and when you were playing. But it was high intensity. It was, if you're
Yeah,
playing
lots
AAA,
of.
it felt like you were, you know, playing in the best league in the world for your age group.
Probably
And you
were.
were.
I mean,
Yeah.
really,
Yeah.
4 or 5 days a week. I think summer camps are a thing now. I don't know if you were part of that era where summer hockey was a
Just
really big
started when I
thing.
was
So
playing.
I
Just
missed
starting.
it. I never played summer hockey ever in my life once. I played soccer. But that, and I think now a lot of kids come from out of town and kind of get billeted almost. Like they move in and they move in with a parent of a player on the team and they come from Sudbury or from California or from Alberta or from Newfoundland, whatever, to live in Toronto, to have the hockey experience, and they bring them in from all over the place,
All
which
over the
is,
world, Johnny. I've heard
well,
like
yeah.
Russian players coming over
That's
and them,
crazy. I
you know,
remember the big
families moving
story.
over here.
Do you remember Richard Park played for Minnesota Wild? He played for a few different teams around the NHL. He was a big story because he was a California kid who came to play for the Young Nats and lived in the city with his older sister, and it was like, this kid who came over at like 14 from wherever he was from in California to play minor hockey in the MTHL back then, the GTHL now. It seemed insanity, but I guess he was a trailblazer now more than
Yeah,
ever.
that I don't remember, you know, growing up. I'm sure there were kids coming up from Michigan, you know, some kids coming up from the States. I was a big part of the battle though between the MTHL and the OMHA, because the OMHA was really fighting about, it's kind of like a brain drain almost, like all the best players from, you know, Newmarket and Durham
Yeah,
region and
Vaughan,
out,
King
you know.
City, yeah.
Exactly. They were all wanting to play in the MTHL to a point where I actually got screwed over badly. My age group, we got excluded from the Pee Wee tournament in Quebec as a penalty
Oh
against the
no.
MTHL. Yeah, we weren't allowed to go. We were the only age group, I think, ever, you know, in the history of that tournament that no representation from the MTHL because
Really? That's a highlight tournament. I
it was
went
the
to that
biggest.
even with
Everyone.
Wexford.
You,
Yes.
when you were a kid, you dream, when you were before Pee Wee, I mean, you were a kid when you played in it, but you were like, if you were in minor novice or minor
That was it.
Adam, you're like,
That
we
was
got
the
to get to
goal.
Quebec. Yeah, you got to be in that
Yeah.
tournament.
Hat trick. First game in the Colisée.
Wow, look at you, Johnny. I wonder
Yes.
if Jammer played in Quebec.
I wonder.
Let's find out. Here he is, longtime NHLer, former Maple Leaf, former teammate of yours, Johnny, and analyst down in Chicago, now an author. His new book is out, Hockey Is For Me. Here is Jamal Mayers, and a legend in the MTHL. What's up, Jammer? How you doing, buddy?
What an introduction. You guys have to travel with me. No, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Excited, as I'm sure you guys are, to see that hockey is back, and looking to see what happens. It's unprecedented times, and the guys are going to compete for the cup. This is exciting.
Before we get there, Jammer, we're just reminiscing minor hockey. Did you play AAA in Pee Wee, and did you make it to the Quebec tournament?
I sure did not, MJ. I was a double A player. all the way up until 14. I played for Don Mills Flyers. Prior to that, I played for the Leaside Kings for years. So we played in the Gatineau tournament at Pee Wee. It's the elite, the second tier tournament, but certainly knew all about that tournament and was watching from afar all the guys, our age group, competing. And there's no question about it. It still holds its lore all these years later.
Yeah, it really does. That's interesting. Like the MIT almost up in Gatineau.
And that's right.
It's, you know, but that, I didn't know that about you though, Jamal, that you played double A, like a guy who made it to the NHL, a guy who you were in the league for a long time. But your story, it's actually not, you know, it's not that rare. I know Mark Giordano had a similar situation.
I played Matt double Molson. A in high school.
Yeah,
well.
There you go. Yeah. So like, is that something that comes up in the book, Hockey Is For Me? And when you talk about your story, how many people are surprised that, not that double A is like house league or anything, it's still very good hockey, but there's a lot of kids that, you know, when, like, I grew up playing with Jason Spezza. Spezza, when we were in novice, you knew he was going to the NHL.
Exactly. Well, I think this book is, I've written five of them, but this first one is just me kind of getting my toes wet and learning how to skate. Certainly the other books touch on different elements, but the biggest thing I can say honestly is that for me is about loving the game and enjoying the game and continuing to get better. And what I try to tell kids is that their development is not a linear path. Very few players it is. So for the players that aren't Jason Spezza, it's about enjoying the game, loving the game, continuing to get better. And the finish line isn't 12 years old. The finish line, you know, hopefully if you make it, is, you know, what kind of player are you going to be? And I tell my 7-year-old, maybe I'm crazy, I tell him the finish line's when you're 25. 25 will tell you who you are as a hockey player. So let's not get caught up and stuck on what you are at 10, 11, and 12. Let's keep enjoying it and loving it and getting better.
Jammer, listen, we spent a lot of time in the planes, talking, chatting, reminiscing, telling stories. I didn't know you had author in your future. Where did just kind of coming up with doing a children's series of books, where'd that come from?
Well, honestly, it would kind of just happen organically. I work for the Hawks, and I do things in the community. They have three great programs. One's called First Stride. Well, the first one's called Goal, which is Get Out and Learn. We visit over 150 schools, mostly Black and Hispanic city schools, and we take over their phys ed class and teach them how to play ball hockey and give them all the equipment to do so as one of their curriculum things going on through the year. And then we have First Stride, which allows those same kids, after they've done goal for a year, to come to the rink, eliminate all the obstacles as far as transportation, getting them to the new practice facility that's in the west side, and get them on the ice trying skating for the first time. And then you know about the Hawks, Little Hawks program, which the NHL and NHLPA partnered up to create an avenue at low cost, less than $150, for these same kids all over the city, in fact, to try hockey for up to 10 times, full gear, head to toe. And I'm part of three of those programs. But a lot of those programs we do don't start until third and fourth grade. And a couple years ago, with my little guy being 5, I was trying to think of how are we going to engage these younger kids in these schools to think that skating could be for them and eventually hockey. And then born out of that was me telling tiny little stories about me growing up and playing the game, and it turned into it. Before I knew it, I had 4 and 5 legit stories that I would read to my little guy, and he would inevitably say, well, what happens next? And I'd be like, oh, I don't know. So I'd have to go back and start writing. And after I wrote 5 of them, I said to myself, well, I got to stop because this takes a lot of time, and I don't know if anything's ever going to come of it. And so I presented it to Pete Haston and to everybody at the Blackhawks. And right from the get-go, they were extremely supportive and behind it and helped me find an illustrator. And it was a 2-year process to get this first book up and out. And I'm excited because, you know what, guys, for me, it's about, you know, think about the times we're under right now. I certainly didn't have the foresight of how timely this would be. But for me, it's about three things. It's how to bring up the topic of diversity and inclusion for parents, for coaches, for administrators, and for, you know, even teammates, to understand how can we possibly make our environment, whether it's athletics or whatever they're doing extracurricularly, more inclusive and more enticing to other families that may not think it's for them.
We're chatting with Jamal Mayers. The book is Hockey Is For Me. You know him as a longtime NHLer, former Leaf, and an analyst down in Chicago. And you mentioned at the top of the conversation how excited you are that, you know, everyone's back in camp and we're going to have hockey up and running again in a few weeks. And you cover a team and you live in a market that is in it's in a weird spot. You know, the Blackhawks, they didn't have a great year. I don't think they were going to get in. I don't think they would get to the top eight, but they're in now at 12. They're playing Edmonton, and it's not like the Oilers have a rich history of playoff success in the past handful of years. What's the mood like in Chicago? How do you feel about the chances of Chicago? I don't think it would be shocking the world to beat Edmonton, but considering the circumstances, how do you feel about their chances against the Oilers?
I think they're good. I think, you know what, one thing that's really strange about this playoff, and for every team, usually, as you know, MJ, it's a battle of attrition to get to the playoffs. Can we get there and healthy? I think we might have the group. And that's for the teams, I believe, in the top eight that legitimately, before the season starts, think they have a chance. But now, for all intents and purposes, almost every team is healthy. And so you're getting, yes, they've been off for 4 months, but you're getting a look at teams that really believe they have an opportunity to get off to a good start. And the benefit for the Blackhawks, in my opinion, is the shorter the series benefits them. So if they get, you know, Corey Crawford obviously is not attending training camp right now, but if they have a great goaltender, goaltender becomes even more important in these short series. They get off to a good start. I know there's excitement in Chicago. I know they're excited to get started, and I don't think they feel like it's a lost cause. I think they're excited about an opportunity to be in the playoffs and to play the Oilers and see what happens. They have the experience to lean on as well, so let's not underestimate that as well.
They need goaltending for sure, and Corey Crawford unfit to play to start camp, and if, I don't know what that means in Chicago, but if he's not ready to go, then there could be issues. But the other issue about staying healthy is getting through the next couple weeks, Jammer, and getting to the bubble and having as many people negative, hopefully everybody, as possible. And I thought of you when we're talking about guys stepping up in the dressing room and saying, hey, guys, you know what? Even though we're in training camp now in our home cities, we're not in the bubble, we got to be smarter. That means no bars, no dinners out. We got to lock it down now to make sure we stay healthy. Would you have said something like that? Would you have called? I mean, I see you as a guy who would do that. And who might do that for Chicago? Because I think it's an important part of the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, and I think a number of guys would say those things. I think Duncan Keith for sure, Johnny, Jonathan Toews, there's no question about it, even Patrick Kane. I think that, you know, There's no lack of leadership in that room. I think you're absolutely right that is exactly what every locker room should be saying. And at the end of the day, someone's going to have to do the grocery shopping. I'd say order out, get yourself to the hub city, get yourself to the bubble, because that's the most important thing right now as they start to prepare. So, different times, no question about it, but sacrifice now as every player has done. Why not sacrifice now for a chance to compete for the Cup?
The book is called Hockey Is For Me. You know him as a longtime NHLer, former Leaf analyst with NBC down in Chicago, Jamal Mayers. Great catching up with you, Jamal. We'll do it again down the road. Stay safe. Thank you, buddy.
I appreciate it, guys. I love listening, so keep it going.
You got it. There he is, Jamal Mayers. And you know, we were talking about this earlier, Johnny, and we both agreed on this. And it's not about one particular team. If you're Bettman and company, you got to get through camp. You got to get into the bubble. And I think you've got to get through the first kind of play-in round. And then you would feel maybe not 100% comfortable. You may never feel 100% confident and comfortable, but much more so, because then half the teams are going home. And the teams that are left, there's eight of them left, they can see the finish line. They can see the Stanley Cup. They can feel it. So the idea that they might somehow put that at risk by doing something stupid or selfish, it seems more far-fetched at that point as opposed to right now where you're dealing with 22 different teams and who knows what's going on in all these different markets.
Yeah, a week to 9 days in, you'll send home four teams, 212 people. That just lowers the odds right away, more controllable group, and you'll have the rhythm of life and the days and the food, and you know, guys will figure out how it works safely. I don't think guys will be figuring out how it works and how they can cheat the system and get out and take risks. They'll figure out how do we make this manageable, how do we make it entertaining, fun, livable for up to 2 months in this system. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, everyone's referencing the next 10 days until they get to camp. And then I think you're correct. They probably have to do a little quick quarantine and some rapid testing to get cleared into the bubble. And then, yeah, getting through exhibition week and then into that first round. But once they do that, I mean, Bundesliga, they got through their
Yeah,
season. The
absolutely.
EPL, they're getting through their season.
I feel the same way about the bubble
Golf
down in
is getting through their
Orlando.
season. I
Yeah,
mean,
I think there might be some positive tests. There might be, but
sure, there
you
will
can
be.
trace quickly, you handle it appropriately, and you move on. And because these other sports have had to deal with that, with different athletes, you know, basically in and out of the sport based on a
Right.
positive test or whatever, we've become accustomed to it. And it will never feel normal. We hope it won't be the normal for long, but I think because we have got so far down this path and we've been building it up for so long and we've been talking about every possible angle for so long, we've prepared ourselves collectively for when that happens, when a player has to miss a game or two players have to miss a game. Okay, it sucks, so be it, but at least we're playing. Let's go. And let's brace ourselves for it and be ready for it. And the players and teams can't use it as an excuse. If it happens, so be it. You still got to go out there and play.
You just got to wrap your head around it, and it's going to happen. Someone will test positive. Treat it like an ankle sprain. Treat it like a hamstring. Like, you know, people get hurt. They separate their shoulder. They miss 10 days. It's what happens. And it's terrible that it happens this way, and it's seemingly unfair because it's not related to the game or whatever. But that's how the teams and the athletes will absolutely approach it that way. There'll be no feeling for themselves. This isn't right. It's like, nope, we got to keep going. Got to keep playing. We have to keep winning. And so we as fans and media should probably try to approach it the same way. It'll be unfortunate, but it's going to be the reality.
I think you're right. And what's going to suck is the fact that a lot of these guys are going to be asymptomatic and they could play. They feel like they should play, but they can't play, which obviously makes it very different. But we all know the rules and everyone knows it going into it. All right, Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, will join us. He's down at the Dome right now. The Jays are still working out. So we'll get more of an update on how the team is looking. Vladdy moving to first base. We'll get into that conversation. And Scotty's tweet led to a Travis Shaw quote tweet that led to all hell breaking loose over the weekend. We'll tell you about that next. All right, so more often than not, you know, I'm a fan of social media. I take part. I'm out there. You know, I'm in the game on
You're out there
Twitter.
today.
I'm out there
What
today.
is
I'm out there today. Twitter and
yes
Instagram, everyone's posting.
I was just scrolling, just trying to, you know, keep abreast of any breaking news, and I saw a tee shot posted by James Duthie of you looking silky smooth, apparently with a 7 wood. I don't know what that was. It's the smallest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, were you trying to lay that out there about 165?
Yeah, it was a
What
three hybrid. Might have
is
been a four
happening?
hybrid. Might have been a four
Was it
hybrid.
180-yard par three? What is that?
Yeah, it was the first hybrid ever created, and it's the
It looked
size.
like it.
It was that's makes it even tougher to hit, buddy. That's the beauty of that club, man. I was locked in. That was on the fifth hole at Coppenwood, and I hit a butter cut. Might have been a margarine cut. Our
Oh,
compliments,
it is a par
margarine
three.
cut. It's a par three. It was a 207-yard par three, and I put one about 5 feet.
All
And
right,
there's
you're playing a
video
cut into
evidence.
a pin that looked like center left. I mean, you'd probably want to play a draw in there. I mean, if you really control the ball flight both ways, as I know you like to do.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point. Like Duthie hits almost exclusively draws,
Draws,
and
yeah.
he drew his in beautifully. And I hit a cut over water into a tight pin on the left side of the green. And we got up there, and we both looked at each other. We're like, I would say your flight path was probably more advised than mine.
Listen. Bruce Litsky, I think he won like 4 times on tour. He never hit anything but a cut in his entire life. So
Yep.
if it works,
That's right,
keep
man.
going with
Butter
it.
cut, margarine cut. Can't
That's
believe it's not margarine cut. I don't care, man.
got 92 written all over it, the National.
There you go,
Kidding
breaking
me?
a hunch.
That's it.
Yep, I'm calling. I'm still waiting on the National, but I got some bad news recently. I'm not sure they're letting guests in at any point this summer, so that
Ooh.
might delay us getting out there. We'll see. I don't want to put a bow on anything yet, We're still working towards that. But the Jays are in town. They've been down at the Dome all weekend. And our boy Scotty Mitchell's there. When was the last time we talked to someone at, like, a sporting event? Like, he's actually in – is he in the bubble?
Remember,
like,
in the building.
I guess he's in the building, in the bubble. Here he is, our Jays reporter. How would you define where you are right now?
I am standing in the 200 level on the third baseline, staring at Austin Martin working at third base for the first time as a Blue Jay. So I'm in the building. I've been temp checked. I'm healthy. I have no COVID toes. I have no fever. Okay. I'm good. Everything's good in here, man. This is the most normal feeling I've had in, I guess, about since March 11th, I think it was.
Well,
why 200 level?
Take us through that. Why are you in there?
Why not down by the field?
Yeah, no, there's no field access for us. They've got us roped into an area in a suite area up on the 200 level, and that's where we go. No ballpark access. Other than that, we're doing everything via Zoom. So really the only benefit of being in the building is getting to watch live baseball and to get out of the condo for a little bit. So other than that, you can pretty much do everything from home. So it's a unique situation. It's interesting. It's new for everybody, but this is our new normal right now. So you just get to take some bad videos like you'll find on my Twitter for the last few days, and there's many more to come. There's many more to come.
Well, let's get crazy here, because we're back in the sports world. We're back in the hot take environment. So is Austin Martin taking hacks at third because Vladdy has moved over to first? Can you connect those dots for us, Scotty?
Well, look, I mean, we knew Vladdy was going to first base eventually, and we knew Austin Martin can play third base, especially when two of the high-end comps that he got in the draft are Anthony Rendon and Alex Bregman. So, you know, I think that was the question, where are they going to work him first? And he's been at third base since he ran out on the field about 15 minutes ago to stretch. So third base, you know, shortstop was never really an option. That's where he was a little bit in college. But, you know, third base, second base, and then the question is, will they start working him in the outfield, which obviously there's a huge long-term hole in center field at this point. So it looks like they're going to keep him comfortable. He's played some third base, so they'll let him, you know, find his way. And I'm sure they'll move him around a ton, and, you know, we won't hear a lot about it because he's going to be at the alternate training site. We won't have eyes on him all summer. But the versatility is really what is the attraction with this guy, and it's going to be interesting to see where he lands ultimately. But he gives the Blue Jays a ton of options in terms of being able to fit him kind of wherever they need him in probably 2022.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Vladdy moving to first was inevitable, and I'm all for this move. I've never understood that conventional wisdom in baseball where you just continue to push a guy at a position you know he can't play. And anyone that watched him play at third last year, he is not capable of playing the position. He was always going to first. Maybe he even ends up as a DH. I don't know if it's a lock he plays his whole career at first. He might not. We'll see. But I like what you said as well. You talk about connecting the dots. Them moving over him over there indicates maybe they feel they can catch lightning in a bottle this year with 60-game seasons and the uncertainty that comes with that. It's not necessarily a development year. It's a let's put our best team on the field type year. And this also, I think it takes the pressure off Vladdy in terms of the shape he's in. I still think it's important that he stays in shape so he can stay on the field. But he doesn't have to move at the same pace that he had to at third base. I'm all for this move. I like that they made this decision. I don't care what they were saying 6 months ago. This was always going to happen. It should happen. I'm all for it starting now. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, pretty much the same way. I mean, I think it's more about 2021 than this year. I think they just look at it, and they came into camp in February, and he was doing a little bit of work at first base, so you could see it kind of go in that direction. I mean, you could see it go in that direction 2 years ago in Double A, really. But when you look at what they've done this year, they want to get him ready for next year. This is about getting this team ready to contend. And you can see now that the dominoes are kind of shifting from the fact that it was all about development. You were trying to develop him at the major league level. You thought you had 162 games back in February to see if it was going to work. This team wasn't going to contend in a real full season. Now, like you said, anything could happen in this season, but it's really about getting his feet wet and then moving into 2021 with him as their long-term first baseman and then trying to fit the pieces around. You're going to go into an offseason. Now you know you have a hole at third base. If you want to bring Travis Shaw back, you can. depending on how he performs. But now you know you need a long-term third baseman. You have your first baseman, and you really just want to take the pressure off him because he was trying to develop at the major league level as a third baseman, and he was completely exposed last year, whether it was the eye test, whether it was the metrics. You looked at him and you knew he wasn't a major league third baseman. And years ago, if that kind of pressure kind of affected him in the batter's box, and he said it didn't, but you want to make this kid comfortable. You want to put him in the best position to succeed, and the best position to succeed is put him over at first base, let him not worry about playing a real, real tough position at third base at the major league level when he just simply can't do it. And now you want to see that bat flourish, because if Vladdy isn't your third, fourth hitter, something's gone wrong. So whether, you know, whatever glove he's toting around, whatever glove he's got, wherever he's playing on a daily basis, whether it's a couple games at third, first base mostly DHing, the bat is what's going to make him special and make him such a key part of what they expect to be a championship caliber team at some point here in the next 2-3 years.
Scott, you mentioned briefly Travis Shaw. You dropped a bit of a bombshell for him, and he kind of spent the weekend cleaning it up. How's that relationship with you and him right now? Is he upset that got out there in that manner? And it sounded to me like he was just reacting to news that he didn't even know that he was going to be asked to spend the entire season in the hotel. Maybe just rewind and kind of how the weekend went and that entire exchange with Travis Shaw.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting situation because, I mean, that's one of the things you lose in this environment. I mean, I can't go up to Travis Shaw's locker in the clubhouse and have a man-to-man conversation and kind of, you know, talk things through. So that is lost. And so if Travis Shaw's mad at me, I don't know at this point. But, I mean, I presented a piece of information that he took to Twitter and obviously had some thoughts. And when you look at the whole story, really, I reported it Friday, and it kind of flew under the radar for a couple of days that the Toronto Blue Jays management did not tell these players or give them any indication that this quarantine bubble could last past summer camp if they do get games approved here. And to me, that's a terrible miscommunication or lack of communication on the team's part. And, you know, you could say that's getting ahead of yourselves. You can say, you know, we don't know what it's going to look like if games are approved, because they're going through those conversations and discussions right now. But when you look at the reality of it, to not warn these players that they could be in this bubble all summer for 3 months through the end of September, to me is pretty amazing. And it's a lack of foresight on the organization's part. And Shaw talked last night, and he said that management sat all the players down on Saturday and talked them through it and told them all the possibilities. And it's kind of pretty amazing that didn't happen 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and that was clear, yeah, with his reaction. Like it was a genuine reaction. It was almost like he was taking in the information that you presented, Scotty, that if the Jays are up here, or anyone that comes up here, you have to abide by the quarantine laws of the federal government, which means if you're spotted breaking them, it could cost a substantial fine, maybe jail time, although jail time is never going to be realistic. But he was almost caught off guard. And I understand his take. He's like, I don't want to stay in this hotel or in the stadium for the next 60 days or 90 days or whatever it's going to be. But it became abundantly clear to me, the way that he reacted and the way, I wouldn't necessarily say he backpedaled, but he came out and he said, you know, that's on me. I didn't realize it was tone deaf. It feels like someone got to him within the organization and said, please, like, we're negotiating with the federal government. They're concerned we're going to break the rules. And you basically just tweeted out, we're breaking the rules, man. Like, we're not staying
here.
We
don't even know the rules.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know the rules. But if those are the rules, that's not happening. Like, we're not doing it. So,
well, that's exactly it. I mean, he was a complete shock to him. He admitted yesterday that, you know, that was news to him. And then I guess he did some research after a few minutes, or like you said, someone told him, like, hey, yeah, it might be a possibility. Then he backpedaled a little bit. And the reaction's understandable. The amazing part is just for an organization that talks about opportunities and alternatives on a regular basis, that they didn't present the opportunities and alternatives to their players when they all came up here. So, you know, just a lack of foresight on the organization's part, and it caused a little stir. And, you know, that's the original report. These guys have been told that $750,000 is the fine if they are seen in the street. Not up to, that is the Quarantine Act, that is the max fine, but they've been told specifically $750,000, and Shaw was just shocked that that stipulation was going to go on potentially past the end of camp here. And you know, we should get some clarity this week. I know the Blue Jays are hoping you know, to find out and figure out where they're going to spend their 30 home games this year. But you know, time's ticking, and next week they fly to Boston for a pair of exhibition games. So we should get some clarity, and these players will have some clarity at some point this week, I would think.
Scott, when you get around the players, as a former player, I mean, I can't even imagine not knowing that or not being told that that's a possibility, and the reaction, like, what is the organization doing for us right now? Have the players gotten to the point where they're mildly frustrated, not at the situation because they understand it's out of their hands, it's even understand at the organization's hands, but just at the at not knowing, at the instability of their situation? Are they getting frustrated with not knowing where they're going to be playing this season?
You know, I don't think so. I don't sense that. I think these guys are happy to be back, you know, in a baseball setting, going back to work. And it's very similar to like any of us. I mean, we would love to be, I know Hayes would love to be sitting in his cushy studio in his big chair. And, you know, you just kind of have to deal with things as they come. And I think players are really happy to be back in a baseball routine. You know, whether they'd be happy in a bubble all summer, you know, I think we got an indication of that on Friday, but they're just happy to be out there doing work. They're around their teammates. They're back, you know, in a somewhat sense of normalcy, trying to ramp up for their job that's going to start on July 24th in Tampa. So, you know, they all understand the situation. I think they would love to have clarity. They would love to know, but there's so much unknown just, you know, outside of that, outside of, you know, any sort of where you're going to play your home games. There's uncertainty whether the season is even going to happen, whether it's going to get shut down, who's going to get sick, who's going to stay healthy. You know, this is just the world we live in. I think the players are kind of accepting that and taking it and rolling with the punches at this point.
With Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. So even though Marcus Stroman is no longer a member of the Blue Jays, he's found his way back into the news cycle up here. He and Randall Grichuk going at it over the weekend on Twitter, and somehow Aubrey Huff was involved. But, you know, Stroman is he played a big role in the daily chatter and narrative and, you know, analysis of the team while he was up here. He was a fascinating figure. He had his ins with different media members, but in large part, the fans supported him, loved him up here. He seemed to love the city. He went out of his way to prove that with tattoos of the city skyline, etc. But for me, you know, I'm past the Stroman era. I don't care about Marcus Stroman anymore. I don't wish any ill will against him. Go ahead, do your thing with the Mets, but you're gone. Does the ghost of Stroman still hang around that clubhouse? Like, is he still something that – is he a guy that comes up at all among the players?
No, not at all. I think the Stro Show, you know, there's no reruns on Twitter for the Stro Show. There's always something new, and, you know, that's how he stays relevant, and that's how he likes to spend his days. And he's always got an opinion, and, you know, love it or hate it, that's who he is, and he's not changing, and he'll tell you that. And, you know, I think you see the reasons that, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays wanted to move on from Marcus Stroman, because when you look at the situation kind of objectively, the dude's a pretty good pitcher. And, you know, he's a real good number three on a championship caliber team. And the Blue Jays felt like, you know, there was just too much kind of that comes with having Marcus Stroman in a clubhouse. And, you know, being around this team for the last 4 years, it's very apparent that he has a very strong personality. He has a very he has a lot of influence on the younger players, and the Blue Jays clearly didn't feel like that was what this club needed. And I think a lot of people that have spent time around Marcus would agree with that. And you know, results speak for themselves. And if he goes out and pitches well this year, he's going to get a lucrative contract. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see, because I think, you know, Stroman has this this real charismatic personality, and he loves to, you know, smile. He's got a very, you know, dynamic personality that draws people to him. And I really do think there's a shelf life on it, because people start to see who he really is and how he really acts and what he's really about. And, you know, I think that's probably Marcus Stroman first, second, and third. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that kind of develops in New York, if he stays there, or if he does go sign a long-term deal somewhere else. You know, is there that expiry date as well, where some teams just say, hey, man, you know, it's not worth the trouble at some point.
Enjoy it down there, buddy. Normalcy. We've been seeking it for about 3 or 4 months, and you're in the building, so take advantage. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you.
All right. Cheers, fellas.
Here's Scott Mitchell from the Rogers Center. And that's interesting that he said, you know, this feels normal, the fact that I'm in the building, where leading up to this, I got the sense that a lot of people maybe would feel trepid walking back into a building or being out in public or whatever. And Scotty said, you know, that's what he's been seeking out for a while. And it is different. He mentioned if you live in a condo downtown, you know, that's why the beaches are full. That's why Trinity Bellwoods, you know, blew up a month ago. Yeah. It's all people that have been in condos for 3 months.
Everyone says, oh, just stay in your house, stay in your house. Well, if your house is 400 square feet and it's in the 25th story, then, like, sometimes you need some fresh air and you gotta go somewhere to get it. So I have sympathy for that situation, and a lot of people are in it. So, and just to kind of find, and I can hear the cracking of the balls in the background, like a little soundtrack of baseball going on. And it's like, you know, pucks hitting the glass and slapping off sticks. And you can see how that would feel good. That would feel normal, sound normal. The rhythm, the players aren't too frustrated about where they're going to play because they're just happy to be playing somewhere, anywhere, and kind of do what feels normal. Even though we know the world outside is not yet there, when you're on the diamond, on the pitch, on the ice, it will feel normal. You won't be thinking about, I wonder if this guy's going to breathe on me or cough into his arm. You're just going to be thinking about playing. And I think that would be a pretty liberating few hours for everyone to go through.
Big time. We'll come back, wrap up a busy show, tee up tomorrow's show, including a big guest tomorrow in the 4 p.m. hour. We'll tell you about that next. All right, so this came out throughout the show. We just got word Kyle Dubas will be on tomorrow at 4:25.
Nice.
Yeah, well, looking forward to that.
Back to work off the golf course and ready to get after it. What I will find interesting is I'm presuming the GM is picking the 53 people that are going into the bubble in consultation with the coaching staff and everyone else, but like, what happens if the owner wants to come in? What happens if, you know, Shanny wants to come in? Like, how do you negotiate that? Because kind of your boss, but maybe we need another athletic therapist or another equipment person or whatever, or a ninth defenseman, whatever it might be. Like trying to, because when you start running the numbers, if you're going to bring in 30 players, 22 staff goes quite quickly when you have 5, 6, 7 coaches.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think in terms of ownership and stuff, more of the hangers-on, those questions will be more relevant once we get to the conference final.
Yes,
and the cup final.
Along.
Yeah, and I wonder if by that point, if we're into mid to late September, the numbers are really low in Edmonton, if the league decides, okay, we're going to expand here and we're going to allow the owner to come in and allow family members to come in, all that stuff, right? Yeah, because if your team is in a cup final, you're not sitting
not in the bubble
watching that on TV.
Yeah, they won't be in the bubble, but they'll be in a suite and they'll never come in contact with the players ever. But they'll be there in person to watch.
Yeah, exactly. You're showing up. We're bringing you right up to a luxury suite. You can watch the game in here, you know. And I don't see why that isn't possible. Like, I know they want to really make sure no one gets into the bubble. I get it. But doesn't it seem reasonable that you could fill up the luxury suites with people if they all come in at different times and you kind of jockey
but different times, coordinating the hallways and you know, there's food and there's drink pass. I mean, there's everything you do adds to a greater degree of risk. But I absolutely expect them to do that. The players will walk in one door, and that door will be boarded off like a security system, and you will no one get near it.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be Fort Knox. So. All right, Johnny. Well, you're back tomorrow, buddy. So Kyle Dubas at 4:25. We're looking forward to that. The Leafs are back in camp. The Raptors are in camp. The Jays are in camp. TFC's playing with Tigers back this weekend. We got a lot cooking, man. Looking forward to it. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.